Hello, all my friends with benefits, and welcome to the American Benefits Podcast, where we talk about everything employee benefits, government policy, economics, human resources, and workplace trends, and more. I'm Jason Hammersley, Vice President of Communications for the American Benefits Council, a Washington, D.C. trade association that advocates for employers, connecting public policy and private sector solutions to shape employee benefits for the evolving global workforce. Today, we're looking at benefits from a slightly different angle and talking with someone for whom that term, benefits, takes on an even greater meaning. Here with me in the studio is Dan Rashke, the Chief Executive Officer for TASC, that's T-A-S-C, and it's the largest privately owned third-party benefits plan administrator in the nation. Located in Madison, Wisconsin, TASC manages a wide variety of employee benefits offerings, including Affordable Care Act, employer reporting, COBRA administration, health savings accounts, non-discrimination testing, mass transit benefits, and on and on and on. Dan has worked in employee benefits since 1983 and was named CEO of TASC in 1995, but his true passion appears to be philanthropy. And not only has he introduced a special workplace giving platform for his own employees, that's something I want to learn a little bit more about, he is also a leading advocate for a nationwide campaign called The Greater Give to make it easier for all employees to donate to charity. So whether you're an employee or an employer, that should intrigue us all. So let's find out a little bit more about it. Mr. Rashke, thank you for being here with me.
Thank you for having me, Jason, and thanks to American Benefits Council as well.
You bet. So let's start out with the basics for the uninitiated out there. What exactly is a TPA? What do you see your job as?
A third-party administrator, there's a few of them out there. Some people might view them as a third-party benefit administrator for retirement benefits. Some are for self-funded health care. In our particular case, we're a third-party benefit administrator for employee benefit accounts. Think of all your health and welfare and fringe benefit accounts, as well as other COBRA benefits, retiree billing for retiree health benefits, COBRA, and some of the compliance services that you reference in your intro.
So you help employers who want to offer employee benefits. You help them manage that operation.
Yes. In our particular space, there's a lot of interactions and transactions that go on relative to these benefit accounts. And when an employer puts those programs in, it oftentimes involves a burden on HR.
Right.
So the employer's got to decide whether or not they want to insource it or they'll outsource it. They usually pick a third-party administrator like us to do that.
I mentioned a few offerings that you take care of at the top of the show. You mentioned a few more. Of the many things that TASC does, which of those is taking up the most time and energy right now?
Right now, it's the benefit account management. So if you broke our organization down into two pieces or two spaces, you've got the compliance side. And what happened is that had a wave with healthcare reform.
Right.
And with the political environment. That has softened a little bit just because of shifts. On the benefit accounts, that has now proliferated into many different types of accounts due to the trends with this new workforce coming, and then our economic conditions are improving.
Are you seeing a lot of growth in that area?
Yes. When you have growth in the workforce, that's going to occur when people get a little more stable in their employment. It starts to go beyond just the various healthcare accounts, like a flexible spending account, a health savings account, limited purpose accounts, wellness, to now you're seeing more accounts around parking, transit, daycare, tuition reimbursements coming into play.
Yeah, that's a big one.
Yeah. Even some employers are putting in student loan reimbursement, which then needs an account to facilitate that. And then certainly giving is coming back stronger, and it's becoming more of a donor-centric model.
When you talk about the workforce increasing, are you talking about simply the fact that unemployment is lower, or are you talking about, are you including the trend in more independent workers and gig workers and contract workers?
Yeah, whether you're independent, like a sole proprietor, mom and pop, or the gig world, if you would, or even in the traditional W-2 wage earner, there is lesser unemployment, so that's gone down a little bit, and a little more stability in wages. We're not maybe all the way where we need to be, but there's stability there. So as a result, more people are looking at these accounts and participating in them than before.
Now, those accounts are very commonly tax advantaged.
Yes.
You're here with visiting D.C. from Wisconsin to talk about the greater give, and we'll definitely get to that. But are you active in advocating for other policy matters affecting employee benefit plans, like tax policy?
Right now, the focus is on the greater give, which has to do with making a giving account or giving itself to be a pre-tax benefit. I continue to monitor and advocate for things around current healthcare reform, mm-hmm. such as Cadillac tax provisions that can's been kicked down the road a few times, but it's still there. It hasn't been repealed, so we stay close to that. So those are probably our areas of focus right now. There are times we will look at movements, such as there is legislation out there for student loan to be a tax advantageous account. Those bills are out there. We're monitoring. We would get behind that as well. But at this time, we haven't put much energy there.
How did you personally get involved in the employee benefits world?
So I've been in it 35 years, roughly. It started when I graduated high school. I got my insurance license, went to a little class at Marquette University. My father happened to own an insurance agency. So my vision was get an insurance license, work for my father while I was going to college, and then I was going to go off to law school. And I saw the opportunity to go deeper in employee benefits. So it was mostly around those mom and pop businesses in Wisconsin. And then I got deeper entrenched in it and felt that, okay, this is probably my path. So TASC is currently with myself and my wife, so you would consider it a second generation family business my father had founded.
All right. So if you've been in the game for 35 years, that's, you started right around or right after ERISA was passed. So
yes. That
is when this was all really blowing up.
Yeah, right? So I would have come in about 1983. So when you think of ERISA, you think of flexible compensation, 401k. I mean, you're in that late 70s, early 80s period, and the cost curve for healthcare was materially shifting at that time, too.
So it
was... It was more of a focus on the insurance side of the equation. In the later 80s is when we started to pivot into the more tax advantageous benefit accounts, because the thinking was to make the coverages or the ancillary expenses more affordable for people.
So what inspired you then to become such a passionate advocate for philanthropy specifically? Was it related to benefits, or did you take a different track to get there?
Well, I think it's a couple inflection points, you know, depending upon how you're brought up. And I was brought up in a family that felt that you got to roll up your sleeves and you should have a degree of stewardship. So kind of like a church, if you would, where show up, give of your mind, give of your checkbook, give of your time. Same thing with your community. So I think there was a philanthropic upbringing. Then the next thing that happened is we as an organization became successful. And as a result, I wanted to share those successes. So then there comes in the philanthropic piece. The last piece is we're in such a unique position as an organization because the space we play in and our competitors, we feel can be very beneficial to enabling other people's giving. And that's what really caught my eye, the domain intelligence on how a flexible spending account works or a health savings account and all of the processes. It was, why can't we make it that easy and frictionless for giving and tax advantageous?
So the idea is to be a Pied Piper of givers. Basically,
yes.
To rally other people behind you.
Yes. In fact, the concept around the greater give and the idea of a giving account is not a corporate responsibility, but a shared responsibility model, which is, yes, you want the corporation to lean in and do good in their community, but if you have a group of employees willing to do good, let's make that easier for them. The third component of that is, can the government provide an incentive via some form of a tax incentive, payroll tax incentive that gets an employer to lean in a little further and gets the employee to lean in a little further.
And that way everyone is pulling on the same side of the rope there.
Exactly. Yeah. And there's a tremendous number of donors that I think we don't oftentimes think about because we might discount them because they're not the very wealthy, but it's your everyday philanthropists that we're feeling if we can mobilize them and get them all pulling, as you said, in the same direction, we think that it can be very valuable for not only the business, but also the individual and certainly the community.
Now, philanthropy for philanthropy's sake is obviously valuable in its own right, but is there a particular cause or charity that motivates you personally? Like when you give money, is there someone that you like to give it to?
Yeah, on the individual side and the family foundation, because we lived in healthcare, we gravitated toward that. But what I found myself is further gravitating toward disadvantaged populations, disadvantaged children, or disadvantaged people economically. But I think what's important is having your own cause, but I don't proclaim to prescribe my interests on others, which I think the world of giving needs to think differently. It needs to look at that next generation of donors and really try to create a model that's going to allow them to give to things that appeal to them.
So obviously this culture of giving is something that you have established, your family has established through TASK. How did the idea of encouraging others to give take place at TASK? What sort of program did you implement at TASK before you got started on trying to get the whole world to sing here?
Yeah, there's a whole bunch of inflection points. But for our own employees, we do a couple things. We do paid time off to volunteer. So as an example, we give our employees a week's worth of paid time off to go volunteer. So we'll pay them to go out. And then we do what's called dollars for doers, where if they will go and volunteer on their own, we put money per hour in an account that they can then give away. And then we also run campaigns so that they can give money away through your traditional United Way campaign, as an example, but also to give money away through a donor advised fund. Which a donor advised fund is merely just a designation of a 501c3 where I can put money into as a donor, one of the TASK employees as an example, and they can later direct where they want that money to go. They don't have to commit today to exactly where that money is to go because they don't know exactly where they want. They just want to fund their own mini foundation, if you would.
Right.
So we embedded that into our culture and into our employee benefit program. And then the organization will do match programs for new donors to kind of get them stimulated. And then we have our own traditional corporate citizenship or corporate giving program.
Well, that's a lot of opportunities that you offer to your employees. What's the take up on that?
It's very high. And the reason it's high is because you might have an employee who doesn't earn as much because their job profile might be the type of position that isn't an executive or whatever it might be, but they have time. So they can participate by giving time that we pay them to give. And then what I found is that that little incentive just to do that, when they started feeling the value of giving their time, they started to do it personally. Then you've got another population where maybe they're best served to sit on a board and maybe write a check because maybe they have greater means. So if you look across the entire group, the participation is very high. It's in excess of 80%. I don't know the exact number, but if you look across all those pieces. Now, that doesn't mean everybody's writing a check or that 80%, but they're giving of some treasured value, whether it's their time or their money.
Obviously, that's a fantastic anecdotal story. Have you looked at what sorts of programs other organizations are doing, be they large organizations or small organizations? And have you looked at whether they're having the same kind of success? Or is it just that you're hiring some really great, generous people?
No, I'm seeing it elsewhere. I've seen evidence in organizations like a Black & Decker who might have a a donor advised fund giving mentality, but then a match program, and then they might have two themes that the organization gets behind, let's say the arts, and then your traditional United Way as an example. But then again, the ones that are having success, I think, like them, is they're appealing to the donor who wants to gravitate towards something they want to get engaged with. So again, the ones that are having more success in my mind now and in the future are going to be the ones that move to more of a donor-centric model, focusing on their employees, especially this next generation who doesn't want to always follow what the man, you know, Dan says as the CEO. Right. That's fine. You know, Dan, you want to do that. But I, as an individual employee, 25, 26, 40 years old, 50 years old, my interests might be different. So I think the ones that are having success by engaging their workforce are the ones that are listening to what the workforce interests are and bending their efforts more in line with them.
But you as a CEO are setting the example of a giving philosophy, and hopefully that will filter down throughout the organization.
Yes. Yeah. And I think when we go out and serve our customers, we're seeing that those CEOs are very interested in the same. The struggle they have sometimes is they don't always have the tool set, and they don't know when they encourage certain behavior, certain activity, what are they doing to the business and the HR department and other things. Give you a little anecdotal. I was speaking at a in-business session on this, and the questions from the floor from these business leaders were just, well, how do I start? And I'm only 12 people, and you know, I can't jump in and do everything you do, Dan. So they were just looking for, give me some guidance, give me some direction. And a lot of business owners, you know, those HR offices and finance offices are doing 18,000 different things. The last thing the employer wants to do is burden them with more. So I think there needs to be more guidance and more direction and a well-thought-out plan. And that's another area where the Greater Give is going to assist these people.
Yeah, maybe that's where the federal government can help step in and, yes, and facilitate. You sometimes talk about empowering the everyday philanthropist. Who are you talking about when you talk about the everyday philanthropist?
Looking at those that might be in the lower end of the upper class, if you would, or the entire middle class, or the upper end of the lower class. And I don't know if those are the appropriate terms to use, because I don't want people to look at that offensively or like I'm trying to label somebody. But, you know, most people are not, you know, Bill and Melinda Gates. You know, most people are not right in that sphere. And there's going to be another group that they just can't go there. But this group in the middle, if you would, the meaty middle. And, you know, we've got a great workforce out there. You know, you got 135 to 140 million people, you know, working out of the 150, 55 million that can be. But a lot of those people are sitting in the 5.5 million businesses that are under 100 people. And a lot of those people are making a good living, and they want to do good, but they just don't have the means or wherewithal to create a family foundation like maybe I can or the next person. But with this new direction, with the donor advised fund or the flexible giving, you're able to set up your own little mini account, mini foundation, if you would. And that's where I think the greatest appeal is, because if we can mobilize that group, which is a bulk of our workforce, again, it goes with your point, we're all pulling in the same direction.
So the Greater Give imagines a greater role for employers in facilitating personal giving. And you mentioned that anecdote where there clearly seems to be some interest in the audiences you're talking to. What is the rationale for giving employers a greater role here?
In the sense of the Greater Give, what we see is if an employer is going to take a greater role, the employer is going to do it because they have a interest in the social part or corporate responsibility. But we have to remember they're still a business. And we have to remember that that's what they're put on this earth for. So I think with the Greater Give, if you can follow the same thing we saw in the 80s and the 90s when daycare came into play, flexible spending accounts came into play. The rationale there is, again, that shared responsibility. Let's provide the employer an incentive that it maps to their business interests to put this program in. So if I'm going to have additional expenditure and costs in facilitating this program, and if I can create more giving by my employees, why not that have that be pre-tax on the payroll? So then the employer is going to get the saving of FICA, mm-hmm. you know, Medicare and Social Security. So that's one big piece there. When you look at where we're at now with tax reform, the dilemma is when the standard deduction was doubled, we're going from 30 to 40% of the population that can itemize down to 6 to 8%, possibly as low as 5.
That's very low.
So the incentive is lost. Mm-hmm. Now, with that said, I don't believe that all the employees only give or an employer lean in simply because of the incentive. But as we know, incentives work.
Yeah, they're there for a reason.
They're there for a reason. Yeah. So incentives can be in the tax system, could be in your company. They do change the behavior or create the behavior we want. So the rationale there is to mitigate the fact that there is a concern that people are going to back away from giving because of the loss incentive due to the current tax reform. So we think, with support of both sides of the aisle, we think that this is a perfect time to get new legislation in there to allow for a flexible giving account to operate very similar as parking or transit, as an example.
Yeah, talk about the flexible giving account. How exactly would that work?
It would operate very similar to other accounts. An individual would make an election at a point in time, let's say annually, and ask their payroll department to take a sum of money out of their paycheck every pay period. And instead of doing it after tax, and then that person would put it on their tax return, like one might do for other things, in this case, it would be pre-tax. So now I have the ability as an employee to save state and federal income taxes and my matching Social Security and FICA. We believe that we would cap that account, and that's what our approach is, because again, it's focused on the everyday philanthropist. So we're not looking at trying to appeal across the spectrum, but that would allow the incentive not to get unwielding, if you would, if people were concerned about the tax implications or revenue implications.
So there would be an annual limit on contributions to this flexible
Correct.
Giving
Very
account.
Similar to daycare, very similar to maybe monthly limits on transit, or even flexible spending accounts or HSAs have limits. But then that money just simply comes off the payroll, and it's moved to the 501c3, the charity of their choice, either directly or through a conduit such as a donor advised fund.
So I go to my HR department and I say, before the beginning of the year, I say, I want 5% of my salary to go pre-tax to the human fund. Mm-hmm. And so that would be taken out pre-tax, and it would reduce my taxable income, and it would eliminate some of the payroll tax obligation of my employer, and the money could go freely to the philanthropy.
Correct. So your take-home pay increases and you're doing good.
And this would be able, individuals would be able to give to any accredited charity, whether it's a church or a hospital or a university or the United Way or anything like that.
Yes, exactly. And the beauty of it is it operates very similar to what the employer, the payroll, and the employee are used to, because you do that with 401ks, you do that with daycare, you do it with medical. It's not that foreign, and the infrastructure is there. The idea of adding another deduction on the system. The other beauty is you don't have to worry about substantiation and reporting, because the employer is your checks and balances, because you know it went off the payroll. So it's not like somebody's falsifying that they contributed. They contributed. You could see it in the records, and then the employer would facilitate that money just like they do 401k or even the payroll taxes that they have to submit. In a reasonable period of time, they would be required to get it to the designated 501c3 charity.
Would an FGA participant be able to then take a deduction if they do itemize their taxes? Would they be able to take a deduction on that donation as well?
Not on those dollars, but kind of like daycare as an example. If my daycare costs were $9,000 and the cap was $5,000, uh-huh. I pre-tax $5,000 out of payroll. The additional daycare expense I could potentially itemize or put mm-hmm. it on the necessary form if I'm eligible to do so. Mm-hmm. But you couldn't double dip. you couldn't take a pre-tax deduction and then turn around and try to take another deduction on the taxes.
All right. Well, that'll make the budget hawks feel a little bit better, I suppose. Is there legislative support for FGAs? Who's the championing this issue on Capitol Hill right now?
Yeah, I probably at this point wouldn't be wise to name specific names because I don't want to steal their thunder. But yes, we've been working on the Hill extensively. And the neat thing is both in the House and in the Senate, we're getting support. People are signing on with full support. Others are looking at it and considering it. The other thing that's neat is it's bipartisan. So we're seeing the support with both the Democrats and the Republicans. So this isn't a one-sided issue. And then we had a chance to go deeper with key champions in areas of House Ways and Means, Senate Finance. And we've even had some efforts to test the waters to see if the Treasury in the administrative or executive branch would have any concerns with it. And they don't, which is really neat. My thinking is this whole effort, if others can be the champions and take advantage of building their brand, great. This is not an effort to be self-fulfilling. You know, if I benefit because people pat me on the back, or if TASS benefits because they associate it to our organization, great. We're being good stewards. But I want to make sure we stay very focused on who really benefits, and that in my mind would be the donor through the tax savings and ultimately the beneficiary of those monies.
Are you building a coalition of support outside of lawmakers? So for example, the charities themselves, churches, universities, small business, are you building other like-minded individuals to join your cause here?
Yes, we have, in fact, even competitors of ours. My president this week was in a different city than I am, and he was meeting with one of our competitors that we periodically visit with and says, hey, would you come in the pool and support? Definitely, they would support. Intermediaries who are in a position to help enable this, banks, payroll companies, they're in support. On the flip side, yes, associations that are in the nonprofit community, whether it's the arts or healthcare, are coming on board and supporting it. And then the business community, we're seeing support there as well. So we have yet to really run into any particular segment, if you would. You might have some people question or look at alternatives, but those are individuals. But no group or population or segment out there or class or industry or anything has really looked negatively upon this as a collective body.
So how can large employers, like those that the council counts among its members, how can we support this idea and how can we support the greater give?
Well, large employers can support in a couple different ways. They could go to thegreatergive.org. There is a place to indicate interest at this point, and then we would keep them up to date, and then we would reach out to them. And eventually, when the bill comes out, which is in legislative council, there is a bill drafted. It hasn't been entered or sponsored or released. It has a sponsor and they're working on co-sponsors. But when we get to that point, it would be great to have your members involved in participating. One of the reasons is just because they're great employers and their mindset is probably already there. Plus, they've taken the lead already because a lot of your members have already gone, even without the tax incentive, and put in great programs. The last thing is they have such a large number of our workforce under their direction. And when you talk about champions, you know, where you need that employer, that CEO to get behind a giving program, I think your members, especially because of their position out there of a presence, could be champions to this cause as well.
And is there anything that employees should do? Should any of them be listening to this podcast?
Yeah, I think specifically if they're in the HR space, if they too would go to thegreatergive.org and learn more about how this is going to be constructed. In the input form, they're able to give us direction relative to, well, if you were to do this, Bill, hey, consider this and consider this. Because I think, and the construct of the legislation is on the website. the actual bill is not. But you can see the design of it on the website. But I think what's important where the employees, whether it's just an individual employee or a lot of your members could be affiliated with the finance, HR department, or executive areas, we'd like to know what they think about it relative to operation or relative to how best to position it, because they know best. Because the last thing I'd want to do is create something where it's got value over here, but all we're doing is causing a disruptive nature or maybe going against that frictionless idea. I don't want to create friction. Mm-hmm. And I also don't want to believe that one or two people in a cocoon think they know best. So if we can get that input from your members as individuals or representing the business, would be awesome.
And if they have that input or if they want to lend their support, what's the best way for them to do that? Should they go to thegreatergive.org? Is there some sort of mechanism for them to comment?
Yes, there is. Yes. Right now, the greatergive.org has an input form. We are going to establish opportunities for different segments of individuals to subscribe to a membership so we can provide pointed information to them and allow them to access. So as an example, an employer who wants to go beyond the legislation and understand some of these tools, donor advised fund, systems that are out there, it's going to be able to provide that as well. Right now, though, most of what they're going to find is really around the legislation. And that had to do with the Greater Give kind of standing up as we saw this wave of tax reform and we saw this economic upturn and these employers leaning in already. We put our emphasis on really making giving pre-tax.
Well, I look forward to hearing about the bill when it drops. When it does drop and you're building more momentum for it, perhaps you'll take the time to talk to me about it a little bit more and tell me how it's going.
Yeah, I would like to add, if I could, I talked about being in this 35 years, so I'm showing that I'm on the older side. So I'd be remiss if I didn't reference, you can also get information via Twitter, you know, at the Greater Give. Or you can go to LinkedIn. There's also another option there at the Greater Give. But being an old timer, I'm not quite as in tune as the next person.
I think you said that all right. I think you got it all right. Mr. Rashke, thank you so much for sharing this idea with us and for joining me today.
Thank you, Jason. And again, thanks to your organization. You do great work.
Thank you. You can learn more about TASC at taskonline.com. That's TASC with a C. You can read Dan's CEO blog at TASCCEO.com. And you can learn more about The Greater Give at thegreatergive.org. The American Benefits Podcast is a production of the American Benefits Council and its staff. If you liked what you heard today, or if you're just feeling extra charitable, please go to iTunes and leave us a nice rating and comment, which will help others learn about the show. 5-star ratings are tax deductible. To learn about membership in the council, please visit AmericanBenefitsCouncil.org. Music generously provided by Copilot Music and Sound. See their portfolio at CopilotMusic, no hyphens, no spaces.com. Thank you for listening, everybody. We'll speak to you again soon.